Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When Cambridge-based author Joanna Rakoff was 23 years old, she landed what might seem like a dream job for a grad school dropout living in New York City.
She became an assistant at a literary agency that represented one of the world's most famous and famously reclusive contemporary writers, J.D. Salinger.
The job was barely a step up from being a secretary, but the experience led to Rakoff's new memoir, My Salinger Year, in which she describes the connection she made with the man over a handful of interactions and by sifting through piles of his fan mail.
Joanna Rakoff will be at Porter Square Books tonight at 7 to sign and sell copies of her new memoir. But first, she joins us now in the Radio Boston studio. Joanna, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Joanna, in the book, you just paint this wonderful picture of what I think many young 20-somethings landing in New York City, living in Brooklyn, have been through. So tell us how you ended up at Salinger's literary agency.
Oh, my God. It was completely happenstance. I had dropped out of grad school. I grew up in the suburbs of New York, then my family was very centered on New York, and that was always the city to me. And dropped out of grad school in London, came back, was kind of crashing with my parents, crashing with a friend, took a job working as a PA on a Barbra Streisand film, hated it, didn't know what I was doing, and was told, given a card and said, call this placement agency, they'll get you a job in publishing. I didn't even know what that meant and thought it meant working at Random House or some large publisher.
And you had been an English major.
Exactly. Okay. I had been an English major.
So it fit the theme of what you wanted or seemed to want.
Yes. And I thought I wanted a career in academia. I had done honors in English. I was very sort of serious and thinking about theory and all these difficult things. And I just thought this was fate that someone handed me this card. And so I called the placement agency, not really knowing what would happen. And they said, that day, they essentially said, we have a job for you at a literary agency. I had no idea what that meant. No, I'd never heard of a literary agent. I went to the interview, and that day, they gave me the job, my still having no idea what that meant.
And you described showing up in your, I think, green turtleneck and plaid skirt, kind of what you thought the literary assistant should look like. And you paint this great picture of entering this sort of inner sanctum of the literary world, where conversations about Joan turn out to be Joan Didion, and Judy turn out to be Judy Blume. But then you find out that there's an even more famous client of the agency. And could you read the section in your book where that revelation dawns on you? This is where you're getting a barrage of this sort of directive by your boss.
Yes, exactly. So, she said, this is my boss. So, she said, settling in her own chair behind the vast expanse of her desk, we need to talk about Jerry. I nodded, though I had no idea who Jerry was. People are going to call and ask for his address, his phone number. They're going to ask you to put them in touch with him, or me. She laughed at the ridiculousness of this. Reporters will call, students, graduate students. She rolled her eyes. They'll say they want to interview him or give him a prize or an honorary degree or who knows what. Producers will call about the film rights. They'll try to get around you. They may be very persuasive, very manipulative, but you must never. Behind those huge, heavy glasses, her eyes narrowed and she leaned across the desk like a caricature of a gangster, her voice taking on a frightening edge. Never. Never, never give out his address or phone number. Don't tell them anything. Don't answer their questions. Just get off the phone as quickly as possible. Do you understand? I nodded.
And Jerry, of course, is J.D. Salinger. So you
exactly.
almost have this sort of bodyguard role you're supposed to play, fending off the letter writers, the phone callers. Now, Joanna, interestingly, you had actually read no Salinger at this point. Somehow you never read Catcher in the Rye in high school. What was your reaction when you first learned he's at the agency? Were you underwhelmed?
No, I wasn't. You know, I was pretty shocked because although I hadn't read Salinger almost out of contrariness, which seems to be a gene in my family, I thought he's so popular, his work must be bad, or he's so popular, you know, I'm not going to jump on that bandwagon. There's no way I would relate to his characters because everyone I knew loved him, including my own family. My parents loved him. My sister loved him. So I just thought, you know, no, it can't be for me. I want to read difficult books. I was reading sort of very cold, hard fiction at the time.
But you did eventually binge read a lot of Salinger after you began working there. And then you were in this role of answering calls for him and letters for him. Paint a picture for us of what some of those calls and letters coming in were like. They came in bushels by the day.
They did. Yeah. I mean, a huge portion of my job was kind of acting. I mean, the agency job was, we were sort of Salinger's gatekeepers. And my component of that was responding to his fan mail. And as my boss directed me, fending off callers who wanted to reach him in some way. There was this legend that some assistant in the not-so-distant past had given out his address to a reporter. And this appeared to be true because there was an Esquire reporter who went up and found him, I think, because this...
Up in New Hampshire where he had lived.
Exactly, exactly.
And was that the end of that assistant who gave away that number?
Yes, exactly. That was the thing that sort of held over your head. There was this assistant and he gave out the... I think it was a he. Gave out the phone number and...
What were the letters and calls about? What did they want to reach him for?
They really ran the gamut. So they kind of fell into a few categories for me. There were people, first of all, just to get them out of the way, who were just crazy. A lot of crazy people are attracted to The Catcher in the Rye. In particular, as we know, you know, people like Mark David Chapman, those are the kind of famous crazies who've used Salinger.
The John Lennon.
Yes, exactly. Assassin. John Lennon's assassin. People who've used Catcher to kind of justify these violent acts. I don't, you know, fully understand it, but there is this component of his fandom that is comprised of crazies. Then there were a lot of adolescents who would often write in the voice of Holden Caulfield. And I loved these letters. You know, they would sort of write, "Dear Jerry, you old bastard, I'd get one hell of a kick out of it if you'd write back to me and my crumb bun Steve, you know, and tell me that I'm a bastard too." And
meant to channel the voice of Holden Caulfield.
Yes, yes. And it was boys and girls, and they seemed to run, you know, from age 13 up till almost 30. Really, more of them were kind of high school, college age. And some of the girls were kind of in love with Holden. There was a lot of, "Holden is the only person who understands me. All the boys at my school are horrible, and I wish I could find a boy like Holden." And a lot of, "Only Salinger, you're the only person who understands me, too."
And we should note here that the reason you were supposed to fend off these callers and not for the letters were apparently at Salinger's request. He didn't want them, according to your boss. But
yes,
you got to a point when you decided you had to do more than just send a form letter. So you began personalizing your replies. And it seems like that had a backlash, ultimately.
Yes, it did. So these letters, the component of the letters that I left out are the letters that I thought of as tragic letters, which were letters in which people kind of, confessional letters, people poured out their hearts to Salinger. And those were the letters, both those and the Holden letters. It was very difficult to send back this form letter, which was essentially designed to give people the message that they should not write or make contact again. And it had been composed in 1963, which is when Salinger stopped responding to his
earlier
own fan letter. It felt very archaic. I felt strange because I was writing these letters as me, signing my own name, and I felt strange because I was an earnest 23-year-old who cared about everything. I felt strange sending this letter out. So I would set aside certain letters that just seemed too painful, too wonderful to send this person, send back this blank form letter, this kind of horrible, anonymous, cold form letter. And so I did indeed start responding to people in different ways. Sometimes I just veered from the form letter and sent a more empathic letter saying, "We were so glad to receive your letter. You know, we're so sorry for your loss," that kind of thing. "I'm so sorry that I cannot pass this on to Mr. Salinger." And people often seemed grateful for those letters.
But others reacted angrily.
Yes. Others reacted very angrily. There was one letter from a high school student who was failing English, actually failing school in general. She had been told by her English teacher that if she wrote a letter to Salinger and he wrote back, she would get an A. And I responded to this letter by saying, "Salinger would not approve of this," essentially, because I was a sort of idiotic 23-year-old. And she wrote me back this angry screed that I can't quote on the air.
Did that give you insight into why Salinger wanted some distance from his fans?
Exactly. Yes, it really did. By the end of my tenure there, I completely understood why he had to sort of close the valve, because he himself was this incredibly empathic person, and he did try to respond to all of his fans personally, and it just became too much for him. You know, they wanted so much from him. People relate so strongly to his characters and to him. And I completely understand now why it was so overwhelming.
You know, Joanna Rakoff, in the time you worked at the agency, you had a few phone conversations with him. You met him one brief time when he came in to talk with your boss. He seemed very cordial. So overall, the interactions were limited, but it seems that he had an outsized influence on you. I mean, so much so that you produced a book about this. How would you describe his impact on you?
I feel like there's a way in which he came into my life at exactly the right time. I wanted to be a writer. I didn't know how to go about doing so. And he gave me these little snippets of advice. Wake up in the morning before you go to work. Write for an hour before you go to work, which anyone could have told me.
He would tell you this on your phone conversations with him.
Exactly.
As you patched him through
yes.
to your boss.
He also took me seriously. He would say to me, he figured out through some tiny thing I said that I wrote poetry and read poetry. And he would say to me, you're a poet. Don't get stuck answering the phones. You're not a secretary. And no one else in my life took me seriously. And he did.
And we should also mention that this is a part of a sort of a larger coming of age memoir where you talk about your sort of boyfriend at the time who eventually you ditched. And it's a really interesting way to make Salinger kind of the central anchor of that. So I thought it was a lovely book. And again, for our listeners, Joanna Rakoff will be at Porter Square Books tonight reading and signing. I think that's at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
So again, this is her book, My Salinger Year. Joanna, thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Sasha, thank you for having me.
Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.